Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
All right. Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm an entrepreneur, and I travel around Orlando having conversations with founders and entrepreneurs and people who invest and build the entrepreneurial community here in town. On today's show, we're going to have a conversation with Ethan and Tom. They're the founders of a company called GoodTix, but we're in this studio. And let me just paint a picture for you guys. I walked into the studio through the front door, and I start seeing platinum albums, and I see these famous artists, and I'm walking up these stairs, and there's an arcade here, and all sorts of this incredible things, and I'm in their sound room right now, and some of the biggest names that you guys have ever seen in music, and we're sitting here in the studio. So I just want to paint this picture. It is the absolute coolest thing I've ever done. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Ethan and Tom to the show. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So we're going to there's three people here, myself, Ethan, and Tom. And we're going to kind of go around table. So you'll hear a few different voices. But let's start with Ethan. Ethan, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah. So my name is Ethan Curtis. I am sort of a serial entrepreneur with a focus in entertainment. Spent most of my days working in music, hence the recording studio. Started off as an artist and then started writing music for other talent and then doing promotions and then eventually took over Plush Studios here in Orlando, and we've been really blessed to build this into a multi-platinum Grammy-winning recording facility. Once I had the studio, used that to sort of parlay into management. You know, I have all the assets here to build a music act and been doing that. I manage singers, actors, actresses, and social media influencers. Right now, my roster has a combined following online of over 60 million. And now I am working on this GoodTix project with my partner, Tom.
Yeah.
Who I'll sort of let take it over.
Yeah. So I'm Tom Player, and I've known Ethan for quite a while. We've been friends, and he's been a client of mine.
Far too long.
Yeah, far too long.
Yeah.
We haven't killed each other yet.
That's good.
So my background, I came from music too. I made my living playing bass in rock bands for about 12 years. And during the course of that time, I was always really kind of enamored with the business side of music. And I was the guy in the band who was always dialed in with the management, record label, things like that. I was read every word of every contract. So I always kind of had it in the back of my mind that if I ever was in a position where I wasn't making my living playing as a musician, I wanted to be involved in the business. And the last band that I was in got dropped by our label, and
hate when that
happens. It was kind of a turning point for me. And so at that point, I decided to go back to school, went back, finished my undergrad degree in finance, then went up to University of Florida and did my MBA and my law degree. And after graduating, started practicing entertainment and business law, and been doing that for 20 years. Which is how I met Ethan. Plush Studios and Ethan have both been clients of mine for quite a while. And he came to me with this idea for GoodTix, and I was totally sold. It was just, I thought it was brilliant. And so we've been working on this project for almost a year now, 10 months.
It's been 10 months?
Yeah,
I thought it was March. More like 7.
March?
Let's undersell it. It's been 7.
Okay, it's been 7.
You guys actually have had incredible growth in 7 months. So this is really interesting, the combination of talent here. So you, Ethan, you were helping produce actors and singers, and you were writing music, and you were managing the talent side. You were a part of the talent side where you were actually a musician making your living. And then when you got dropped, you went back to school. Mm-hmm. Like, talk to us about your career in moving in that direction of from going dropped to going, I'm going to go back to school and become a lawyer. Like, that's unique.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not the normal segue, I guess.
Yeah.
But
usually it's McDonald's after getting dropped,
right? Yeah. But, you know, during the time I was playing, I had, you know, cobbled together credits, community college credits, things like that, during times when I wasn't touring and stuff like that. I'd go back to school and then I'd drop, go back to school and drop. So at the point that I quit playing for a living, I had enough credit hours for half a degree, half a bachelor's degree. So I went back and I knew I wanted a business degree. I started out as an accounting major because I really had a knack for that kind of orderly thinking, detail-oriented. And I did really well at that, but I realized it's, you know, you get an accounting degree, you're pretty much going to be an accountant. So I switched to finance because it's more broadly applicable to a variety of business situations and, you know, finished up my finance degree. That was at University of South Florida. And I was working 30 hours a week for a law firm as a paralegal and doing my business degree. And the attorney I was working for really pushed me to go to law school. He's like, you'd be good at this. You need to do this. And he mentored me and helped me a lot. I mean, he was instrumental. And he had some good connections with people who wrote me nice letters of recommendation. And so I applied to a bunch of different schools. I got into UF, which was one of my top choices, and started law school there. One of the typical scenario for law students is the end of your first year, all the really big law firms come on campus to interview for summer internships. And most students try to get a summer internship, hope they make an impression there, get asked back the next summer, hopefully they get a job, entry level, so, you know, the mega firms. So like all the other students, I put on my suit and tie, had my little one-page resume, literally went from like one five-minute interview to the next, to the next, to the next, hoping to make an impression, get an internship, because that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Right.
So I get out of the end of the line, I look at all the other students, their suits and ties, their little one-page resumes, going, you know, waiting to do the same process. And I was like, this blows. I got to do something to set myself apart from those guys. So while I was in the middle of a semester of law school, which is pretty challenging as, you know, as a first-year student, I studied for it, took the GMAT, and I applied to the MBA program at Florida, just on a lark. I didn't really expect to get in because it's, I think in public schools, it's top 20, maybe top 15. But about 5 weeks later, I get this big, thick envelope in the mail, and I'm like, oh, shit. I got in.
I got to go do it.
What do I do now? I'm already in law school. And I couldn't retroactively become a dual degree student because they did have a dual JD MBA track. But just the paperwork was a nightmare. I was already a year into law school. So I just started taking the MBA classes on top of the law classes and running from one end of campus to the other.
Oh, my gosh.
And went straight through summers. And as it turned out, I graduated with my MBA 2 weeks later with my law degree, and I was only a semester behind my law class. So it worked out pretty well. And I worked. I clerked for a law firm in Gainesville the whole time I was up there.
Hustle, man. That's hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my education career path.
Wow.
Then after I got out, I came to Winter Park, Orlando area, and started trying to reconnect to the music business and build up that practice.
Cool. And then, Ethan, this is a part of your story too, right? So while he's doing this, you're out there making music, slinging, mm-hmm. you know, slinging records. And talk to us about how, you know, your journey came into what it is today and kind of segue into the Good Ticks. Like, how you came up with that idea?
Yeah. So like you said, last decade's been spent making music, getting creative. If I was out there singing records, like you said, it did not sound very good. But the studio led to management, like I had mentioned earlier. And as a talent manager, I spend a lot of time around live events. In fact, there was one event in particular here in Orlando. I believe it took place at the Social. And I'll never forget walking up to the venue, right? There was a line of kids and parents around the block. Just tons of people. I got to cut the line because my buddy managed the artist that was performing. But when I got inside, there weren't many people inside the venue. It was far from a packed house. I figured, you know, people start trickling in before the show, but they didn't. You know, it stayed that way until the end of the show. So, you know, at the end of the show, I asked my buddy, I said, you know, what's going on? There's all these people outside, and it's, you know, it's not empty, but not full. And he told me that the issue was that a number of factors had caused the ticket price to balloon to about $90. They'd priced in a meet and greet, there were ticket fees, and a lot of those people on the outside just couldn't afford to buy their way in. And so I asked him, you know, how many tickets went unsold that night? And he said it was about 100 under cap, means 100 under capacity. So about 100 tickets went unsold. And $90 a pop, that's $9,000 worth of value that evaporated the moment that artist walked off stage. And that blew my mind. I mean, I knew the artist who was performing. I know that all those parents that are out there with their kids, none of them wanted to be at that show. So if they'd come inside, they surely would have bought drinks. The kids had been able to save some money on tickets. They would have had more pocket money to buy merch. Plus, a packed house just makes for a better experience. And it provides an opportunity for the artist to engage with more fans, which is a big part of touring. You go out there to get FaceTime with these fans and make sure that they feel connected. So I started thinking, if a show this size at a bar venue in Orlando can lose $9,000 of value in one night, how much value are we losing in the live event industry as a whole? I realized that if we could find a way to sort of address that problem, not in whole, but at least in part, you know, without cannibalizing those full price buyers, people who had been able to afford their tickets on the inside, without discounting the brand behind those tickets, you know, we could solve a pretty serious market inefficiency. And you know, around the same time that this was happening, I was also going through a point in my life where I was sort of looking for something bigger. You know, I got into music when I was, 12, mostly because music's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Tom, you agree, right? Yeah. But to be honest, I'm getting on in years, and cool just doesn't quite do it for me anymore.
You got to pay bills, right?
Yeah.
You got to do something meaningful.
Well, yeah, meaningful is what I'm getting at. Yeah, so I'd been looking for a way to sort of utilize my experience and my network to be a part of something bigger. And so it was this situation and this context in life that gave birth to the idea of GoodTix. So GoodTix is a web-based platform that allows ticket sellers to donate excess ticket inventory to be auctioned off online at a discount to the benefit of charities, helping to drive impact in the areas where a community needs it most, right? So, you know, how much good can a good tick do if a good tick could do good, right? A ticket donated.
Yeah.
How much good can that do? So I did some research, and the average price of a live event ticket in the United States today is about $60. So a single ticket sold on GoodTix has the power to do some amazing things. So we're partnered with many charities. So with our partner, Pet Alliance, an average ticket sale has the power to provide vaccinations for like 18 dogs or cats. The Earth Day Foundation has the power to plant 36 trees, has the power to purify 9,000 gallons of water, to recycle 62 pounds of plastic. With our partner, Second Harvest Food Bank, it has the power to feed 144 people. So think about that.
One ticket.
So if a family of four goes out to one ball game, you know, they have the ability to feed roughly 600 people, which is mind-blowing. But we're not talking about one ticket. We're not talking about four tickets, right? We're talking about a $20 billion industry in the U.S. alone, $200 billion globally, an industry in which 40% of available ticket inventory goes unsold each year. That's $13.3 billion worth of tickets here in the U.S., $133 billion in ticket value globally, right? Meanwhile, venues, promoters, artists, they all want a packed house, right? For all the reasons I listed earlier. So the question is how do we move this excess inventory? Like I said earlier, we got to price these people in, right? All these buyers, because the average buyer's been priced out of the market due to rising ticket costs, to ticket fees, and the secondary market, all these ticket scalpers and these bots that are scooping up these tickets and then blowing the price through the roof, trying to profit. So we have to price this average consumer back in. But how do we do that without discounting the brand behind the tickets? And how do we do that without cannibalizing, like I said earlier, those full-price buyers? So, I mean, anyone who's heading business classes or knows that the answer to that is to create a value channel, right? You know, every good has a value channel. Soft goods have the outlet mall. Why do outlet malls work, right? Because you have to drive out of town to get there. You know, it's inconvenient. You don't know what they're going to have until you arrive. There's uncertainty. The only thing you can really be certain of is that whatever you buy, Josh, is probably last season style, right? But if you're a true price-sensitive consumer and you're willing to jump through all those hoops, you can get a pretty good deal. So the closest thing we have to a value channel in the ticket market, like an independent value channel, NYC's, New York City's half-price TKTS booths. Are you familiar with these?
I'm not.
Okay. So these are physical ticket booths on the street of New York where people will literally and consistently wait in line for hours in the rain or snow and cold, not knowing what tickets to what Broadway shows are available or where they're going to sit until they get to the front of the line. And why do they do this? Because these stands sell same-day Broadway tickets for half price. So they go through all this just to save 50% on these tickets. And they don't even know what's available. Nonetheless, now you wait for it. Nonetheless, last year, TKTS accounted for over 20% of total Broadway ticket sales, proving a need for a value channel, right? Obviously, there's certain limits to scalability and practicality with this booth. Like, we're not proposing we build a ticket.
Are you guys building a ticket booth on Orlando?
Yeah. So, like, I mean, that, you know, that's no good. So, what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring those booths online, right? And by doing that, we do a number of things, right? We get rid of that line friction, because when you're buying a ticket online, you don't have to wait for everyone in front of you to buy the ticket for you to get your chance. We're getting rid of the geographical constraints. Now you can pull out your cell phone and buy the ticket. You don't have to find the nearest ticket booth and get there. And we're elongating that sales runway because we've built in a sales process that is opaque but isn't reliant on same-day sales. So giving us more time to sell more tickets, right? So how does it work? So I'll run through the process. It's pretty simple. So ticket sellers, I don't know, we're working with organizations like, well, major sports organizations here in the city and other large venues. So what they do is they have pretty good historical data as to what shows are going to sell, how much, what ticket inventory they're going to have left. So they donate excess ticket inventory. We list it on goodtix.com at a hidden reserve price that's always below face value. You know, it could be from 10% to 50% off. But you don't know what that strike price is. The user experience is the user comes, they land on GoodTix, right? It's a landing page, and they put in their search criteria. So they'll say, Orlando, location, date, Friday the 13th, category, sports and music, and then the amount of money they're willing to pay for a ticket, all right, $20. So say, I'm Joe, a UCF student. I'm looking for something to do tonight. I have a date.
Good for you, Joe. That's awesome.
She's cute.
Yeah.
Super smart, too. And looking for something to do that doesn't break the bank. I can afford, I know I'm going to take her out to dinner. I know I'm going to have about $40 left over. I can afford two $20 tickets. So I'm going to put in $20 for sports and music event Friday the 13th here in Orlando. I hit search. Boom. It immediately populates and presents Joe, me, with every single ticket on the site that has a hidden strike price of $20 or less, but it presents them as $20. So I know Joe is willing to pay $20 for a ticket. I'm going to show him every ticket that I can sell him for $20 and just call it $20. So the idea is here, you're not specifically searching for events. You're searching for something that meets your price need, right? We're not promoting super discounted tickets, so we're not discounting the brand. But also, this isn't positioned as a value channel, a channel for distressed inventory, right? This is, we get back to it, the cause here. This is a fundraising mechanism for charitable organizations, because once you find those tickets, then you go ahead and you pick from a menu of our partner charities as to which charity you would like your ticket purchase to benefit. And 70% of all proceeds go directly to your charity of choice, right? So we're empowering the buyer to support causes they care about. And we're also giving them a great deal, right? So now they're starting their brand experience with your venue with a really good feeling, as opposed to maybe a feeling of being ripped off when they're buying from some other ticket sellers, you know?
Sure. So in this story, Joe goes on a date. Everyone, we're excited for Joe right now. He's going on a date.
Yeah, he's a
he bought
guy.
These awesome tickets where he's going to go to a show or some sports. And he's having a great time.
Yeah.
And in his event, we're not going to go into the full story of what happens to Joe throughout the night. But
good things.
Yeah, good things happen. But throughout the whole time, a charity, trees have been planted, dogs and cats have been taken care of, people have been being fed, like, a really good cause behind the scene is being happened.
Yeah. So once they make their purchase, not only do they get their tickets, but they also get an email sent to them that indicates the exact impact they've driven. So all of our charitable partners have picked a purpose for the funds they receive. So for Second Harvest Food Bank, it's providing meals to the hungry. 25 cents a meal. 25 cents buys a meal. So if he bought a $40 worth of tickets, that's what? Come on, you're 160 meals,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
160 meals for the hungry, which is crazy. Actually, it's a little less than that because we take 30%. Yeah, so they get an email telling them exactly what impact they've driven, which is super cool, right? I didn't just get two tickets, but I just fed 100 and some people who otherwise would have gone hungry. And with our partner Clean the World, the money's going to build these hygiene kits that are distributed after natural disasters or to homeless shelters. I don't know if you're familiar with Clean the World. They're an amazing organization. They recycle hotel soap, not soup.
Yeah, don't recycle soup. Yeah.
Soap, and they distribute it where it's needed, because the number one killer, child killer in the world is hygiene-related illness. So, you know, it's a statistic thing, but roughly the average ticket purchase on Good Ticks could help to prevent early childhood death as a result of hygiene-related illness for two children. Which is amazing, the impact we're driving here, right? And then this is making the buyer feel good, but this is also impact that the ticket donor is driving, right? So every quarter, we go ahead and we donate the funds that have been acquired to the organizations that have been picked by the buyers, and we donate them on behalf of the ticket donor, right? And then we go ahead, we take those tax donation receipts, we return them to the ticket donor along with an impact report that tells them what funds charities have been receiving from their tickets, the impact those funds have been driving, and a little bit about the stories they've been influencing. They have content that they can use, you know, just to bolster up their charitable efforts. It's a win-win-win, right? People save money, you get to be social more often, they get to feel good about it. Charities get the money they need to drive the impact that's necessary within our community. The people get to decide what impact is most important. We're crowdfunding within our own community. And then these donor organizations, to get more butts in the seats, they increase ancillary income, concessions and merch sales, et cetera. They get to look good doing it. They get to visibility on these charities' channels. They get to build and engage with fans on a deeper level. It's just, in theory, it's a wonderful concept.
Right? Yeah, this is great. And you guys are early into this
super early
to this growth. You know, Tom, kind of talk to us about how you guys connected together and how the company came from I have an idea based on your situation that happened, Ethan, mm-hmm. to what it is today. You know, kind of talk to us about how that grew.
Yeah, it's interesting because when Ethan first brought the idea to me and we started talking about it, we envisioned it as being a nonprofit, a 501c3. And once we started working on it and visualizing the concept and ironing, I mean, here's the thing, when you're developing a business or an idea, there's multiple pivot points where you realize, okay, we've got to make a shift, either a shift in the basic nature of what we're doing or a structural shift. And one of the very first, we were called Front Row Charities. We're set up as a Florida not-for-profit corporation. I'd say within the first month, maybe, we quickly pivoted to becoming a Florida benefits corporation.
Do you want to start with like how that pivot came to be and the program we were blessed with being accepted into?
Yeah, I'm just going to talk about that.
Okay.
Right off the bat, we applied to and were accepted for Rally, which is a social enterprise business accelerator that's through Central Florida Foundation and Rosen and Rollins.
And sponsored and held up by a group of amazingly successful, intelligent, and socially active individuals who have dedicated their time just for the sake of doing it because they believe in it.
Yeah, and Rob Panapinto's his episode just launched. Today we're recording this.
What is his title officially? The chair of Rally or something like that?
Yeah.
Super smart, successful guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some really high-powered, influential, and super smart people involved in that. And it was the best thing that could happen to us in terms of
Absolutely. Of
mentorship, connections, helping us refine the process and you know, bring this thing forward. So, you know, once we got into that, we really quickly realized that we were far better off being a B Corp, a benefits corporation. Florida is one of 33 states right now that actually have a separate classification of corporation as a Florida profit benefits corp is what it's called. And it's a for-profit company with a social purpose. There's a distinction between that and B Lab certification, which I'm sure you know about. Probably a lot of your listeners.
But maybe you can share a little bit about what that looks like, high level.
Yeah, so B Labs is an independent organization that certifies certain corporations. If you look on a product and you see a little circle with a B in it, they're B Labs certified. And to be B Labs certified, you have to meet a lot of criteria as far as, you know, having a double bottom line, social, or actually triple with B Labs, social, environmental, and then of course your shareholders. And it's a pretty rigorous process to become B Lab certified. So there's B Corps and then there's B Lab certified Corps, and there's overlap, of course, with that. So we're not far enough along to meet the criteria for B Lab certification, but everything we're doing along the way is in compliance with their requirements, so that once we have the length of time of business and things, we can qualify. And so we set it up as a benefits corp, and changed the name to Good Ticks.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you guys kind of started out as a nonprofit, going down that route. You guys want to, yeah, you know, be a charity and focus on that. Going through Rally and talking with other people, you guys made a pivot in business early on, which I'm really impressed that you guys were able to foresee that and make that pivot towards a benefit corporation, which kind of sits right in between like the for-profit and nonprofit. Is that right?
Yeah, I think benefits corporations are fantastic. I am 100% sold on them, and I think they can do so much for society because they sort of fill that void between government programs and charities and nonprofits. And they incentivize people to go into business to make a profit, but for the specific purpose of helping society in some way. And there's such a need for that.
Nice.
Absolutely.
So you guys got together. Ethan, you actually came to Tom with the idea, and you're like, hey, man, here's the idea. I was just at the show. And then, like, how did it, like, evolve? So you went and you presented at Rally?
Well, so I'm just like, when I have an idea, like, I can't sit still.
Seriously, the worst ADHD ever.
It's not that. It's just like, I want to either go out and prove it or go out and prove it's wrong and move on to something else.
Yeah.
So I just started calling anyone that would answer my calls and emailing anyone I could to, like, just tell them the idea. And I think after Tom was on board, but I was just trying to put it out there. So I called Dennis Poppy, who's he's the head of is at the incubator UCF. And I talked with him. He told me I should reach out to Central Florida Foundation. So I called there and then got a meeting with Mark Brewer and pitched to him. Then he was like, I should apply for Rally. So then I called Ben Hoyer and I pitched to him and I applied for Rally. That's just three of the people, but I was just out there wherever I could. And then somehow we got accepted to the Rally program. And that was it. So we in our discussions with Ben, said, you know, we should really think. I mean, it's something that we discussed before, but really think about the whole nonprofit thing, because, you know, if this is something that works, and it's something, it's a very scalable idea.
Yeah.
You know, we may need to get some money behind it to scale it and scale it quickly. In order to do that, there needs to be some incentive, right? And mm-hmm. What's that incentive for a nonprofit? So, you know, we really started thinking about the B Corp route. And then we happened to get assigned Sean Siepler, founder of Clean the World, is one of our mentors.
Fantastic.
So then we had immediate access. Then they were the first B Corp in the state of Florida. So then we immediately had access to more insight in that area, and we realized that was the way to go. So we went through that program. Amazing mentors, John Karen, who used to be on the executive team for Darden and a bunch of other stuff, just all sorts of experience in Fortune 500. We had Vishal Gupta, who's a senior vice president of Park Square.
Yeah, Homes. Park Square.
I always say Park Square, Park Place. I always get confused.
Like Monopoly,
that's
Park Place. Right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many people. Kerry Coates, yep, former president of Orlando Magic. I could go on forever. The list has been amazing. But and then we ended up pitching. Because Rally ends with a big pitch night, right?
Yeah, it was a 16-week program, the pitch at the end.
Yeah, so we pitched, and we didn't win. The win went to our brothers over at Yaupon Brothers Tea. Amazing guys doing amazing things. You should check them out, especially if you have money to invest, because they are going to save the state of Florida, our agricultural industry, and our environment. So yeah. Those guys are incredible. And they're just one of the amazing groups of people that we met through this program. So we didn't just meet and gain access to incredible mentorship, which is to this day paying dividends. But we made friends among peers too, other socially minded, entrepreneurial spirited people. And I mean, it's just, it's a real community builder and an amazing program we're lucky to be part of. But anyways, through that pitch and through that program, then we also have gained interest from some investment, and we're closing a deal with that, with a partner. I don't know if we should, like,
I don't think we can announce that yet.
Announce it. Yeah. So, but super, like, perfect partnership for many reasons, experience wise, positioning, opportunities, distribution. It's really exciting. And then also through bringing this idea around town, obviously we started just cold calling anyone that sells a ticket from Timucua house concerts, to Orlando Magic. Orlando City Soccer, Live Nation, and through this process, and we're figuring out, right, everything has its own levers. Sports teams have their own levers to pull to make it work. Companies like Live Nation have their own levers to pull to make it work. Everyone has their own levers, but we're learning those. And through this process, we've been so blessed to find some amazing champions in these organizations.
Yeah. And literally, like, every meeting we have, we take away some
gem,
some nugget of wisdom that helps us refine the process and make it, more universally appealing to our constituencies, our donors, our ticket our ticket purchasers, and the charities. So the other thing that's just been amazing to me is that pretty much across the board, every single person we've met with and pitched the concept to has been incredibly supportive and behind it and just loves it. And it doesn't seem normal to me that everyone would be, like, lined up to help.
And everyone has their own thoughts and concerns, and it's great because it gets us thinking about the things we need to be thinking about.
Yeah.
But it's overall been super positive. I mean, like, we can think. So Chris Dorso at Orlando Magic's been incredible. This guy has been – he's the Senior Vice President of Operations and Sales. Like, probably one of the
– He's, like, one of our biggest cheerleaders.
The biggest thought leaders in ticketing, period, because basketball is the most progressive ticketing association in the world, and Orlando Magic is the most progressive team when it comes to ticketing.
They're super influential.
So this guy has created, like, every groundbreaking process in ticketing over the last decade. Incredible. And he made himself available. He's been our champion in the organization, taught us so much, supported us in other outreach. Incredible. We have Chris Gallagher over at Orlando City Soccer, who sat down with us and just worked through the idea, finding holes, finding areas where it works. Jim Maloney, Live Nation. I mean, geez, he buys us lunch and sits down and talks to us about this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, what a guy. Yeah. I mean, it's just been – so many others. It's been an amazing experience. There's – no matter what – I don't care what anybody tells you. I don't know if they would tell you differently, but Orlando is full of so many, like, successful individuals that are so willing to embrace – entrepreneurs and small business owners and who are socially conscious and aware and care. I mean, I just couldn't believe how many people care. When you just get out there in front of them and show them that you care, how supportive they'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that this is a really good point for the audience to listen. So, I've been an entrepreneur for a very long time and worked with some really awesome groups. And I have entrepreneurs that come to me and they say, "Hey, Josh, I have this idea." And I'm like, "Cool, tell me about it." They're like, "Well, I need you to sign an NDA. I want you to talk to, my attorney." I'm like, "Well, what's going on?" Now, you took this opposite approach, right? So you had this idea. You couldn't sit still. The ADD was kicking in. You're like, "Man, I've got to figure this thing out fast." And you said you were cold calling and emailing everybody, sharing the idea openly, like just going, "Is this good or bad?" Like, talk to us about that mindset shift maybe between those two.
So I just feel like that first mindset you mentioned is doing nothing but putting barriers in between you and progress, right? And everything I've done that succeeded has succeeded because I just put it out there in the universe as much as I could, because that's the only way you're going to learn. That's the only way you're going to invite people in to help. And that's the only way you're going to find out whether or not what you're working on is even worth your time, right? Yeah. So I literally called, like, companies like Cayenne Consulting that make business plans and call them and like, hey, do you guys have anybody to work for you that's in Orlando that I could talk to? Like, you got to pay like $5,000 to get them to make a business plan or more. But I was like, do you have anyone that I could? And that's how I actually connected with Dennis Poppy.
Yeah.
You know, so and so I just talked to people. They're like, okay, this is crazy. This is crazy. You don't know what you're doing. Okay, you're moving too fast. You know, you should talk to this person to figure that out. And then I just followed the trail, and it just helped us to blossom so much faster. And I mean, I don't know if that's really what you're looking for in your question, but it just I feel like it's all about progression and moving as quickly as you can. Obviously, intelligently, but that first process of discovery, I mean, it's only going to work if you're out there learning as much as you can from as many people as possible who have relevant information.
Yeah.
And if you're just putting barriers in between the talking to you, like if I had called Chris Dorso at the Atlanta Magic and said, hey, Chris, I have an idea I want to run by you, but first I need to connect you with my attorney so you can sign our NDA. Yeah. And then once that's taken care of,
he'll hang up on you.
Maybe we can go for lunch. And it's like, kidding me?
It's starting out with a lack of trust right off the bat.
Absolutely. Great point. A lack of trust.
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a balance point between doing your due diligence, covering your ass legally, and moving forward with, you know, in a reasonable way. And, yeah, you know, you can't protect an idea. If you have an idea that's
oh, somebody's going to,
yeah. Yeah. You can't copyright or trademark an idea. So, and you know, most of the people that we're dealing with, you know, we don't expect that we're going to tell them our idea and they're going to turn around and say, oh, well, I'm going to do that.
These are amazingly successful people in their own right. They don't need our idea.
Yeah. Yeah. We're doing it, and they're going to look at it and go, wow, that's a great idea.
And be
how
part
can I help
it.
You and be part of it, not try to steal it from us. So, you know, the thing with NDAs, it's difficult when you're talking about intellectual property stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to have something tangible to protect. And, you know, for us, the best play for protection is to be first to market and build a brand.
Go fast,
and,
right?
Yeah, and get on that life cycle curve of a business ahead of everyone else. So we have the brand recognition. And there's some other ways with our partners, our charities and donors, that we can protect ourselves. But, yeah, yeah, the idea of coming at somebody and saying, sign this NDA before I talk to you. Okay, I won't talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the way you guys approached this, where you guys went out into the community to good people, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. and because of your openness, willingness, you got connected in with some of the most powerful people in social enterprise here in Orlando, but maybe even in Florida, in East Coast. I mean, like, really, really smart, powerful people.
Yeah.
Because of your openness, willingness, and you wanted to share an idea that could really change the world. So talk to us about, you know, as we kind of near the end of this conversation.
Oh, man.
I told you guys this was going to be about 6 hours long, right? But
has it been that long?
Time flies, right?
Cancel what we breathe.
Gosh, there's this phrase I know. Anyways, so talk to us about where Good Ticks is now, and what do you guys need help with?
Okay, so right now we're in beta, and we're sort of hashing out the user experience to make sure it's as simple as possible.
Yeah.
Again,
it's another pivot we've made. How the process
works. Yeah, it used to be more complex, but we beta drove traffic, realized that it wasn't converting, and we've reworked the model, and we'll probably rework it many times.
Yeah.
But so that's what we're doing now, and then also continuously working on onboarding. So if anyone is listening to this that sells tickets or works in an organization that does, you know, we want you to be a part of this, because some of the most recognizable ticket selling brands in Orlando are, and to not be a part of it, it just doesn't look good.
Yeah.
And it benefits them because they get a charitable donation.
Stuff. Yeah.
They get to pack out the house, which makes a better show, mm-hmm. more merchandise sales, liquor sales, mm-hmm. you know, so having those.
And it empowers their fans to support causes they care about, which is amazing. I mean, you're giving a gift to someone. Normally, to give a charitable gift, you have to pay above and beyond, which you normally would. And they're giving us a way for their fans to do that without having to come out of pocket even more.
Yeah, and it's a huge benefit for the charities, because charities spend 50% of their time mm-hmm. and 30% of their money raising money. And this creates sort of a seamless, automated fundraising system for them.
Yeah, so always looking for more ticket donors. Also looking for people who have knowledge and experience in this realm that just want to chat.
Yeah.
Like, that's That's the biggest investment we've got thus far is just knowledge.
Yeah.
And before I forget, we are preparing for our first round. So if there's anyone that's interested in investing knowledge and money.
Accredited investors, we're about to do our seed series of Safe Note financing.
Awesome.
So, you know, I think just stepping back one step, you know, we approach this with a really inquisitive attitude with all the people that we talk to. And, you know, like just asking them to punch holes in the idea, you know, and asking questions. And, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question. You know, it just don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah, you have to be fearless.
Yeah.
You have to be fearless.
Just go out there and say, this is what we're doing. How can we do it better?
Yeah, and position it right, too. So, like, when you're in this... So, a lot of our connections, like, our buy-ins from these organizations that are in process and are massive, they didn't come from us approaching them and being like, hey, will you use our ticket service? No, we got in the door and we were like, hey, you're really smart. You know a lot about this stuff. What do you think of this idea? Can you brainstorm with us? And that was it. And then from that, it turned into, like, maybe we can give this a shot. You know, we didn't ask them. They came out and suggested it. You know, and that's important. Like, when you're nobody, but when what you're building is still nothing, you know, don't be honest with everyone you speak to about where you are and just approach it like you're if you're in discovery, approach it like you're in discovery. Because these are, if they're a smart person, they're going to know when you're overstepping.
Right off the bat. Yep.
Yeah. But if they see that you have restraint and that you're intelligent enough to know where you are in your process, then they'll believe that if they help you get further in it, that you'll continue to know your place and you'll act intelligently.
Yeah.
And they could be a part of the building journey. So, right? So when you're asking them for advice,
they
get invested where they're like, oh, you guys should do this. And we have this many tickets. We could do that. And then they become a part of the journey with you guys.
You're absolutely right. We want you, and we tell them that. We're like, look, we're bringing this to you now because we want your thumbprint on it. Because no one knows better than you as to how this can work for your organization. And so, and it's great. And we've learned. So we've gotten a lot of insight, you know, not just in the local ticket selling organizations here, but with these discussions with these scalable partners, right? Like pro sports teams where we make it work here. We just move upstream for the association or you know, partners like global promotion companies, like Live Nation, you know, that have venues and tours all over the world. You know, we make it work here. We scale globally with those partners. I mean, it's super scalable, but we're still learning, but we've only started to figure out how to model this to make it conducive to the scalable partners by these conversations and by approaching them as teachers rather than someone we're trying to give us something or ask, you know, rather than with an ask. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a saying when I worked at a venture capital fund, they said, if you ask for money, you're going to get advice.
Yes. If you ask for advice, you're going to get money. Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. So guys, I kind of want to like pose this for the audience. So let me chat with the audience for a second. Ladies and gentlemen in the audience, if you are involved in event management and in ticket sales, and you want to have conversations with these guys, Ethan and Tom, just to explore like what could happen if you unlock this value chain in your business, like what kind of impact could you have? So I encourage you to reach out with these guys. And what I'll do in the show notes, I'll put their contact information so you guys could connect directly to them and have conversations. So if you're in an event space and you sell tickets and you want to have a conversation with them, I encourage you to reach out to them. And then also potential investors and capital partners. And then people like Joe, where you're looking for a good time in Orlando.
Hey, Joe.
You're looking for a good time in Orlando.
How'd it go, Joe? Tell us in the notes.
We want to know all about the night. But, you know, check out Good Ticks. Is it... So where could people go to find out more about you guys?
The beta is live, but we're revamping the whole user experience. But that, of course, would be goodticks.com. But if they want to reach us, the best place to do that is reach out to me, ethan@goodticks.com. Email ethan@goodticks.com. And happy to sort of chat it up and explore possibilities between us.
Yeah. And, you know, I normally don't do this, but if there's a Joe out there right now, yeah. I'm going to donate one ticket to Joe.
Yeah.
So I'll plant some trees and I'll give him. So Joe, if you're out there, reach out to Ethan. I'll pay for the first
ticket.
I'm so
glad you said that actually, because that's a whole other part of this, right? Like we're not just accepting organizational donations,
yeah.
But this is something like if you're a season ticket holder and you have tickets that you can't use.
Nice.
You know, you can donate them good tickets and we'll use them to raise money for your charities of choice. And this is great. Yeah. And this is, never mind, I can't go that deep into what
to be continued.
Yeah. But yeah, so this individuals can donate too.
And that way, there's not an empty seat there, and yeah. It goes towards a charity of
exactly.
your choice.
Exactly. And if you spend the last 3 days on Facebook trying to get one of your friends to take your tickets and it's not working, like, you know.
Awesome. So Tom and Ethan, man, two more questions. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of each.
Pushing
so,
it. Pushing it, right.
Tom, what questions should I have asked you guys that I didn't ask? So maybe while you're thinking that,
yeah.
Ethan, why Orlando? Why do you guys choose to build this in Orlando?
Well, besides the fact that we both live here, Orlando is the number one tourist destination in the world. Where better to test a ticket concept than Orlando? You know, we have pro sports teams, we have the parks, we have all the attractions. It's a famous test market, right? Because you have all, not only do you have all that traffic and have those other attractions, but you're getting people from all over the world. So you're able to test concepts with people from all different cultures and all different walks of life. It's ideal. It's ideal.
Awesome.
And I'm glad I got that question.
So that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, limited time frame, we could talk forever, I'm sure. But I would say, you know, what's the one bit of advice to give to aspiring entrepreneurs?
Nice. Closing thoughts, Tom. What is one piece of advice you have for aspiring entrepreneurs out there?
Know what you don't know and don't be afraid to ask for help. And I'll give you an example. I mean, I'm an attorney. I've been practicing law for 20 years, and I have a pretty strong business background educationally and in my practice. But I still know the limitations that I have with certain aspects of what we're doing. I'm an attorney. I've hired 3 different attorneys to consult with us and help us with different aspects of this. I've registered trademarks many, many times, but I hired a trademark attorney to do our trademark work because I wanted the best person possible, someone that's all they do. They're specialized in that. We have a securities attorney involved to help us with that. I'm doing all the drafting and everything, but I want that second set of eyes on it, someone who really, really, that's what they do day in and day out. A patent attorney, you know, of course, I don't know anything about patents, whole different animal, but
he was a general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. General but he patents. Was a general. Yeah. But so, you know, and a lot of people who aspire to be entrepreneurs have a great idea, but they don't necessarily have a business background. And even if you do, it really behooves you educate yourself as much as you can about all of those aspects, but know that the things you encounter in running and operating a business, the breadth and depth of it is so much, one person can know it all. And so, you know, you should know as much about securities and financing as you can learn, but don't try to do it yourself. You know when to pull in these people and build this team around you. And that'll greatly increase your chances of success.
Yeah, a great way to avoid all the pitfalls along the way. Or talk to people who have already fallen in them.
Yeah, and we're trying to do it right from the beginning as best we can. Like for example, you know, when you create a cap table for your business, for us it's really simple right now. We have 2 shareholders, but it's going to get more complicated as we bring in Series A, you know, or seed series and Series A and all of that. And, you know, like managing a cap table can spin out of control really fast. So, and there's so many tools out there for people. Find them, look at them, use them. We signed up with CapShare. It's free, at least at this point, and really easy way to manage your cap table, which we're not going to get a year into this and realize we've got an Excel spreadsheet and it's crumbling because it's just too complicated with, you know, employee stock options and the next round and all that. Just plug it in, automated. Yeah, find the tools and use them. Yeah. Find the people and use them.
And then, you know, I think our biggest takeaway from this is, you know, if you're going to do something that not only changes your life, but do something that changes the world. Yeah. And you'll be surprised how much support you'll get when you're not thinking selfishly. And if you have a really great idea that could change your life and change the world, look into the Rally Social Enterprise Program.
Because yeah.
It changed our life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. So, hey, guys, thanks for sharing your story. This is really awesome. I really love the studio. This is by far the coolest.
Oh, yeah, come check us out. PlushRecordingStudios.com or give us a call 407-695-4484.
Nice plug.
Wrong right business.
There. Yeah. So just to give you guys just one last thing, like the golden nugget. Like I just sat in their recording studio room and there's speakers everywhere and this huge soundboard. And just to let you guys know, two of my favorite movies have been scored like using this equipment. Scarface. In Superman number 2, which was I just found this out from Ethan, which is?
The first Superman movie to have a score, a musical score.
Nice.
Yeah. Recorded. We also did Never Ending Story, Flashdance.
Never Ending
Top
Story.
Top Gun, including Take My Breath Away.
Top Gun?
Yeah.
Incredible. All on that soundboard.
All on that soundboard. Joji Marauder.
Nice. Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening into this interview with Tom and Ethan for Good Ticks and Plush Studios.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Josh.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening in. Go to the show notes. Connect with these guys. Talk with them, especially if you have tickets, if you want to buy tickets, or if you want to invest in and be capital partners with these guys. You know, check them out, doing some really amazing things. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the show. Talk to you all on the next episode. See y'all.
Peace.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.